This is the Photography Podcast on photography.ca, episode number 40, Low Light Photography, for March 7, 2008. Hey there, photo lovers. How's it going? And welcome to the 40th Photography Podcast on photography.ca. My name is Marco, and as usual, we are coming to you from Montreal, Quebec, Canada. So we've made it to 40 shows. Wow. So this would be our Ruby anniversary. So let's shine red today and let's make this an extra good podcast. It's too cool, actually. I can't believe we've actually arrived at 40, and I'm pretty proud of myself. We've been doing one podcast a week for the past few weeks, and it's kind of like quitting smoking, I think, you know? I used to smoke cigarettes 100 years ago, and it was a tough thing to stop doing, but every day or every week was like a reward of not smoking. So doing one podcast every week for the past 2 or 3 weeks, each one is like a reward in that, you know, I've done one a week. So, and the more times we do this, the more shows that get out, the more knowledge that gets out there, and hopefully the bigger community will build. But enough talk. Let's get right into the topic of today's show. And today's show is going to be a podcast on low light photography. And it's a pretty big topic and there's a lot to cover. And I certainly don't know everything about the topic, but I'm going to give you the benefit of some of the things that I've learned. And this podcast is actually a suggestion courtesy of Andre from Brazil. And as always, I much prefer to do podcasts that are suggested by listeners. So if you have any ideas, please just send them my way. You can send them my way via email, photography.ca@gmail.com. You can comment in the blog, photography.ca/blog, or you can make your way to the forums on photography.ca and suggest anything you like in the podcasting forum over there. So basically, Andre sent me a question, and I thought I would answer his question to the best of my abilities, and then add some extra stuff that I thought I'd like to talk about as well. So here's Andre's question. Hello there, Marco. I just would like to suggest a podcast on the topic, low light photography. I'm pretty interested in this topic and related subjects, such as tips for taking photographs in bad light situations, how to preserve ambient light when using flash, high ISO versus digital noise, metering modes, taking pictures at music concerts, and so forth. So I think this is a really good topic, actually. Let's get right into Andre's question. So the first part of the question, tips for taking photographs in bad light situations. Well, right off the bat, I would like to suggest that bad light situations, you know, the only bad light situation that's really bad is when there's no light. A lot of people think low light is bad light. And many times, depending on what you're trying to do with that light, it is bad light. But very often, if you're creative, you can make the most of a bad light situation, in quotation marks. So straight up, in a bad light situation, I'm going to assume that we mean here very, very low light. What you want to do is you want to forget about the shadows. So usually in a normal scene, in a normal photograph that we're going to take, we're going to pay attention to all the tones in the scene. The highlights, the midtones, and the shadows. But when it comes to low light situations, you really want to forget about the shadows because there's such a limited tonal range. The tonal range is much reduced so that you're just not going to get a full tonal range. You can't reproduce it. So you have to give up something. So given that there's not enough light to properly expose all the tones, you want to kind of forget about the shadows and you want to pay more attention to the highlights or the things that are getting light in the photograph. So let's say it's a person and the person is only going to get a little bit of light. Well, that little bit of light is going to give that shot a heck of a lot of mood. And that's one of the great things about low light photography is the mood. You can really achieve something dramatic and very interesting. That's one tip for bad light. Another tip for bad light might be to go for graphic elements. Because you're not in bright daylight where you can see all the little nuances of what's going on in different parts of the scene, you may want to choose things that are a little more graphic, that are simple, actually. So that you don't want necessarily a really complex scene of different shapes and different things going on in all parts of the image, because there's not going to be, or chances are, there may not be enough light to properly expose all parts of the image. So I find in low light, graphic shots work really well. Strong lines, strong shapes, strong forms, and not too many of them. Limit them. So, you know, guide the viewer's eye a little more readily in low light photography. So crop out all the stuff that's not getting necessarily enough light that may not add to the shot, and really focus in on the shapes or the forms that are going to make up the interesting parts of the shot, if that makes any sense at all. How to preserve ambient light when using flash. So for me, this is an interesting part of the question, because for me, personally, I don't like to use flash when I shoot low light. I like to use the actual light that that's coming. And we'll talk about different types of light that can be good, but it can be room light, street light, etc. I'm not necessarily interested in using flash, just because that may well destroy the scene, right? The flash is so powerful that you can overpower it. If someone wants to use flash, go ahead. What I would suggest is the flash, use the flash on the foreground part of the subject. So let's say it's a person and he's in the foreground, and let's say, I don't know, there's a mountain behind him and there's some light on the mountain and you want to get that mountain as well. So you're going to want to use a really long exposure. So when you're mixing ambient light with flash in low light, what I would suggest is, you know, use the flash on the foreground part of the subject, you know, and you can reduce that power. You can use that flash on manual mode so that it can only give just a little wee bit of light if you want. And then use the camera shutter, you know, using a long exposure, 1 second, 2 seconds, 5 seconds, 10 seconds, 30 seconds, 90 seconds for the background, depending on how bright it is. What you may want to do, especially if you're shooting digital, is take a shot of the background first. See what the exposure is so that you can correctly expose the background, and then put your flash on and illuminate your foreground. On to the next part of the question, high ISO versus digital noise. You're going to want to play there, because there's no hard and fast rule. And although a lot of people don't like digital noise, I find it cool in some situations, and you can use digital noise for creative effects. And in night or in low light, you expect noise, or you often expect a certain amount of noise, or a certain amount of noise is not objectionable because people are kind of used to it. And you can use that for your creative effect. What you should be aware of is as you approach the higher film speeds, 1000, 1600, 3200, and now there's new Nikon cameras that go up to 6400, etc., you're going to get more noise. And if you don't want it, you got to shoot at a lower ISO or use software to remove the noise in post-processing. I know Nikon has some good proprietary software that comes with their cameras. There's tons and tons of noise removing softwares out there. I don't want to get into it. But yeah, if the noise bothers you, you can remove it in post-processing or use a low ISO. If you're shooting a person, let's say, a low ISO may not be possible because, as we've mentioned several times before, people have a natural movement in their body. So, and you typically can't shoot people at lower than 1/60th of a second or slower than 1/60th of a second. So in order to achieve that 1/60th of a second, you may well need a high ISO. You may well need to introduce some noise into the picture because of that high ISO, and it may or may not add to your scene. So that's really up to you. So it's really a creative thing. Lower ISOs give you less noise, and higher ISOs give you more noise. On to the next part of the question, metering modes. I like to just use regular metering on my camera. So I have like a multi-zone metering set, and that's my typical metering mode. And I like to use that for low light as well, just because I find, at least in my camera, it evaluates the scene really, really well. And it just works. I mean, I may typically approach my subject and lock the exposure in. So let's say I'm shooting someone from 20 feet away. I may base the exposure on their face, let's say, or on the top part of their body where the most important information is. That's what I might do. But for me, I just use regular metering for it. Of course, you can use spot metering if you have it in your camera. In low light, you can, of course, use, you know, you can use anything you want that works. You can use a spot meter off camera if you have one too. Spot metering in camera would indeed work well. Of course, you have to know a little bit about spot metering before you use it. You know, it just measures a really small area, and you may or may not have to compensate for that area by opening up or closing down. But the way I shoot personally, I just shoot with my regular evaluative multi-zone metering that comes in the camera. If you're unsure, because the light is tricky, you can also slip a gray card in the scene, especially if it's like a still life or something, or a model or subject that you can approach. You can ask them to hold a gray card. You approach the scene with your camera, fill the frame with the gray card, note the exposure, plug it into your camera, back up and shoot. You can do it that way too. Or you could just play. If you're shooting film, you want to be more precise, and maybe that's a great way to do it. But with digital, you know, just check the results on the back of your camera. It's a great learning tool, of course. And in terms of taking pictures at music concerts, my best tip for that would be, you know, the lights change very often at music concerts. And what you don't want to be doing is you don't want to be fiddling with the exposure too much during the concert. Chances are the lights aren't going to vary that much so that you're going to have to be changing modes at all the time. And I've done this before. So what I do is I choose one exposure and I'll shoot on manual, believe it or not. Even though the lights are changing, I'll shoot on manual generally. You know, if the lights are fairly bright and they're moving and changing colors, red, green, blue, as long as it's approximately the same intensity, give or take, you're going to be pretty good. What happens is, let's say, when one light gets really, really low, then obviously the exposure is going to change. But in general, if the lights are flashing and moving around, I'll choose one general exposure. I'll probably choose a wider aperture, of course, to let more light in, and maybe a faster shutter speed. Either 1/60th of a second or 1/125th of a second. I'll want to choose those types of shutter speeds with a wider aperture, but I'll set them fixed. And then I'll just keep shooting. And you'll be surprised at the great shots you can get just using one exposure, even though the lighting seems like it's changing a lot. And that would be my tip for that. So I hope that answers a bit of Andre's question and gives people some meat for thought. And I guess I just wanted to talk about a few other things as well. And one of the key things is lenses. You want fast lenses, if possible, when you're using low light photography. And a cheap fast lens for most cameras is a 50 millimeter lens. Generally, you can pick them up for $100 to $200. And their largest f-stops are usually around, you know, 1.8 or f2, something like this. And those are wider holes, which allow more light into the camera, or wider apertures, and it's going to make your life easier. Because basically what happens when you look through any camera, you are looking at the scene through the lens's widest aperture. And often when you get lenses with really wide apertures or really large apertures, like, you know, f1.8 or f2, often those lenses are very expensive. But when it comes to the 50 millimeter, it's not that expensive. When you try and focus using one of these lenses, it's going to be easy to focus, or far easier than a lens with a smaller aperture. So if your lens's largest aperture, largest hole, smallest number is f4 or f5.6, we talked about this in the macro podcast as well, it's much harder to focus in low light because that hole is smaller. It's letting less light into your camera to begin with, and it's harder to focus. Of course, you can use a flashlight to shine it on your subject, to focus, shut off the flashlight, and then shoot, but it's far easier just to shoot, and using a 50 millimeter, I think, is a great investment when it comes to low light. So get a 50 millimeter, you know, f1.8, f2, and your life will be much easier. A cable release. A cable release is an essential thing when you're doing low light photography, because often your exposures are going to be long, and by long, anywhere from 1 second to 90 seconds, to 5 minutes, depending on what you're shooting, how far away it is, how much light there is. These are long exposures. Now, when you press the shutter release, you are introducing a certain amount of vibration into the exposure, and you don't want to do that. You know, under normal circumstances, you're shooting in the day, you shoot at, you know, 60th, 1/125th, 1/500th. That shutter speed is faster than you're pressing the button, so you're not introducing any camera shake into it. But when you're talking about long exposures, you can definitely introduce shake into the camera. So use a cable release. If you don't have a cable release and it's like a still life or something like that, so it's not moving, you can of course put your camera on timer, which is also a great thing to do. I've done this many, many times. But sometimes when you're shooting a person, let's say, and you catch their expression that you want to shoot, you may find that a cable release is just invaluable, as I have many, many, many times. you're definitely going to want a tripod. Anytime you have a really long exposure, you yourself can't hold the camera steady enough during a long exposure without introducing your own body shake into the exposure. So you're definitely going to want to put it on a tripod. And those are really the main accessories that you're going to want to use. It's also going to pay to learn a little bit about a mirror lockup. So depending on what type of camera model you have, you may want to lock up your mirror during this long exposure as well. Because basically what happens during a normal exposure is there's a mirror in your camera and that mirror moves during the exposure. And normally during the day, the exposure itself is fast enough so that the movement of the mirror won't affect the exposure. Now, the same is not true when you're using long exposures. 1 second, 5 seconds, 5 minutes, yada, yada. That mirror movement can and often does introduce some shake into the exposure that you can see in the final result. So if your camera does have mirror lockup, it pays to learn how to use it, and you might well see a difference in results. As always, you know, just do a test. You know, do a test based on an exposure of 5 or 10 seconds with or without mirror lockup. See if you see any blur in the resulting photo where the mirror was not locked up. Other things I'd like to talk about, sources of light. So you can have candles, flashlights, street lights. Any of these things can be really, really good sources of low light. Even the light from your car, you know, you open a car light during the night. There's a lot of creative light that you can use, or stray light that hits a subject that's really, really cool and moody. Again, that's one of the things that I really love is the mood that you can create with light, with low light. I took a couple of shots for this podcast. Not sure which are going up yet. One of them was a friend of mine. I got such good friends, as I mentioned last podcast. And basically, I just sat him up top a mountain and took a picture of him. He was kind of waiting for me, closed his eyes, and I made him laugh. And I just took a shot of him on the mountain. And you could see all these parking lights or street lights of different colors in the background. And it adds a certain mood. Likewise, I had him just like light a cigarette. He doesn't even smoke, but I made him have a cigarette just for the cool effect, or just to illustrate the effect of the light shining on his face from a lighter. Classic Zippo lighter, made him light a cigarette with it, and you could see his face is illuminated with this orange glow that adds a very cool mood. Another classic thing to do is lights from cars, actual headlights from cars. And that's we've seen these shots many, many, many times, where you'll see streaks of lights from cars. And that's a really simple thing to do. You just get to a nice vantage point where many or one cars are moving with their headlights. You just set it on a long exposure, choose the camera's recommended meter setting, see what you get, and you'll notice these streaks of light. Typically, that type of exposure may last anywhere from, again, 1 second to 90 seconds, depending on how bright the car lights are, how far you are away from them, but they add a cool mood, definitely. If the light is low and your camera's on a tripod and you actually have a flashlight, you could swing the flashlight during the exposure. And that as well is going to trail the light a little bit and add some really, really cool effects. So there's a lot of room to play. There's a lot of room for creativity. And there's also a lot of room for unexpected results. Sometimes what's photographed is not necessarily what you had planned. It's part of the serendipity aspect of photography, especially when you're doing non-traditional stuff. You don't always know what you're going to get. And for me, that's always been part of the thrill. And a lot of times it'll be crap, but you can learn from it, and you can learn from crap. Crap is a great teacher. And I think that's really it. I hope that was somewhat useful for people. And as always, I'd love to get comments on what we just spoke about. If you have other suggestions or have tried other techniques that you'd like to share, I'd certainly appreciate it. Other listeners would certainly appreciate it. So please just comment or send me suggestions, as mentioned at the beginning of the podcast. So I sure hope that answers your question, Andre. I sure hope it gives you some food for thought. And as well, Andre, if I missed something or you would have liked me to elaborate on something, please just send me an email and I can do an extra couple of quick seconds in the following podcast. So that's going to do it for this part of the show. And now on to Photo of the Week. The photo of the week for this podcast comes to us by way of Magua Photos on Flickr, Esther Hernandez from the Canary Islands. And this is a photo called Ductus 6. And I love this photo, and I really love Esther Hernandez because all her photographs are stories. And it's one of the things that I love. It's one of the things that I personally think really differentiates a good photo from a great photo. Not always for all subjects matters, but often. But Esther creates these little stories in one frame from scratch. And this is also apropos because it's a low light photograph. And it's basically a picture of just a girl wearing a dress holding a dog in really low light. But the quality of the light is excellent and it's very, very moody. And just suggests this caring aspect between, you know, a man and dog or woman and dog. And it's just a lovely, lovely photo. Very touching. So thanks as always to Esther for letting me use it. And of course, if you've just downloaded this podcast to an iPod or something like that, you're going to want to make your way back to the web just to see what the photograph looks like because it's so lovely. So just accord it with podcast number 40, and it's the image by Esther Hernandez. Before we end today, I'd also like to thank two more photographers from Flickr who allowed me to use their photographs for this low-light photography podcast. And one of them is Wendine, and Wendine is from Canada, and he allowed me to use the Dim Light of Dusk number 2. And this is just a gorgeous photo, and it kind of reiterates my thoughts that graphic elements work best when it comes to low-light photography. And this is a really cool shot. It's just a couple of plants in front of the sun. And it's just so simple, and it's so graphic and so beautiful, and the colors are so rich and vibrant that, again, please take a look if you're just listening to this on an MP3 player. And, you know, the composition is excellent. It's a square photograph. It just draws your eye right in there, and it's gorgeous. So well done, Wendine. Great shot. And the other shot that I really, really love is by a Thai photographer named Aralea, and she allowed me to use Romantic Walk. And it's gorgeous. This is a gorgeous shot. And by coincidence, it also happens to be a silhouette-y type shot. You know, the sun had gone down and it's a slow shutter of a man walking down the beach. And it's gorgeous. The colors are gorgeous. You have these pastel-y pinks and blues. And you see elements of the dock and elements of the beach and reflections. It's very graphic and very beautiful. Just a great, great shot. Thanks so much for allowing me to use these photographs. And that's going to do it for me for today. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. As always, please comment on the podcast in any of the ways we discussed earlier. Send me suggestions, ideas, criticisms, critiques. It's all good. And we'll be back in about a week with another podcast. In the meantime, keep on shooting, everyone. Bye for now.